Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My mom's partner, he was a conscript at the border guards, and I asked him, what about her? He said, don't even try. He said, 90% don't even get there.
This is Cold War Conversations. If you're new here, you've come to the right place to listen to first-hand Cold War history accounts. Do make sure you follow us in your podcast app or join our emailing list at coldwarconversations.com. We return to Dirk's story from episode 278 with a move to East Berlin following his mother's divorce from his father. Dirk finds school life more relaxed in East Berlin, where pupils are allowed to wear Western clothing and speak more openly, even questioning their teachers about the existence of the Berlin Wall. After leaving school, Dirk starts work in a factory from which he can see into West Berlin, and he longs for a life away from the restrictions of East Germany. His mother's new partner is a conscripted border guard who advises him not to attempt an escape over the wall. However, as East Germany starts to implode in November 1989, Dirk sees a chance to escape. We also hear of his and his family's life in the new Germany. The battle to preserve Cold War history is ongoing, and your support can provide me with the ammunition to continue to keep this podcast on the air. Via a simple monthly donation, you'll become one of our community and get a sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster as a thank you, and you'll bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate.
Hello there, my name is Mark Franks and I served in the Royal Air Force from 1982 through to 2007. What I find fascinating about Cold War Conversations are the stories and opinions of those that lived the other side of the Iron Curtain over that period. It's truly fascinating to listen to, and keep up the good work and all that you do at Cold War Conversations.
If a monthly contribution is not your cup of tea, we also welcome one-off donations via coldwarconversations.com/donate. I'm delighted to welcome Dirk to our Cold War conversation.
My mom and dad got divorced. My brother stayed with his dad in Bernau. And me and my mom, we moved to Berlin. She got a job there, and yeah, we moved to Berlin to Prenzlauer Berg, Berlin Prenzlauer Berg. That was the workers' area, the old Berliner area.
Yeah, no longer now. Yeah. Very sought after.
Yes, yes.
Place to live now, but yeah, Prenzlauer Berg. And yeah. How different did you find Berlin to Bernau?
It was like a different, like day and night. It was totally different. It was like West, like the West would be, I think. So the people were relaxed. They just like typical Berliner, big mouth, big heart. Yeah, so totally different. When I came to school, I noticed straight away that they were totally different dressed, or like Western-like, or Western even, yeah. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, their parents were artists, they were there were like normal workers, so there were no, maybe there was a couple of Stasi, but you didn't notice much. Yeah.
Yeah. You weren't living in a block next to another block that was full of Stasi employees.
Or... No, we were just in these old typical Berlin houses.
Yeah.
And I noticed that also in the school lesson. It was much more open, like in Staatsbürgerkunde, in citizenship. They would challenge the teacher, giving him challenging questions. Yeah. So, and they would just openly answer to it.
I'm presuming you were still being taught things like Marxism, Leninism, stuff like that. I mean, I always imagined that subject being really boring. Was it your least favorite subject?
Absolutely. It was, but I would later then use that to challenge when they said, look, everything has one price, all the food and things like that. And I would say, I asked the question, why do certain things disappear from the normal shops and go into the exquisite shops, delicate shops, which were shops which had goods to a much higher quality, to a much higher price. So they would just put the same products from these cheap shops in these expensive shops. They would get a new packaging, but it's the same to a much higher price. I would challenge things like that. And they would just say, well, these are things you not really need. That's what they would answer. Or some guy even asked, it was about the wall. They would say, yeah, it's an anti-fascist wall against aggressor and coming from the West. And he asked them, yeah, why is the barbed wire pointed to in our direction?
Wow.
And the teacher would actually be honest, and he said, well, we don't want you to go because you get an excellent education for free. We want you to work here and not going, getting a free education here and go in the West. He was actually honest with that. Well, although I didn't agree with that.
And when was this? Was this to the later 80s?
That was 1985.
Right, so
I was in year 10 then, about to finish the school.
It's interesting that, you know, accepting those questions and dealing with it rather than...
Yes.
In the other school, if you'd asked that question, you would have been punished
in
some way.
Absolutely. They probably would send social services around and all sorts.
Yeah.
But in Berlin, it was more relaxed there.
Yeah. And with your education, were you thinking of going to university, or what sort of job were you thinking that you would end up doing?
In school, we had... a subject where we would work in companies. I would send us in all sorts of companies, and they sent me to that engineering company. And I had to work on a lathe, and I quite liked that. A cool job. And that's what I actually then learned as an apprenticeship, and still work to these days and still love it. That's where it started. So I finished after 10 years school, and then did 2 years apprenticeship, and then worked in a proper job.
Yeah. In Berlin?
Yeah, engineering, that? Yeah. In the last year of school and in the second year of the apprenticeship, we had to attend pre-military education camp. So everyone had to go there in order to pass the exams or to finish school. And what it was we had to go for 2 weeks into a camp. We would have to wear uniforms like NVA-like, and we would just live like NVA soldiers with the same daily drills, 6 o'clock getting up, doing exercise and then doing all sorts of exercise, military training, like chemsuit putting on, and it would then end. The highlight was then shooting with a rifle, like Kalashnikov, like looked like a Kalashnikov, worked like one, but was only shooting these 22 milli rifle little rounds.
Yeah.
So I hated that. So that put me actually off. I thought, oh, I don't want to go to the NVA after that, because the instructor, they were training officers who would be training to become proper NVA officer. They treated us really, there was really a hard drill, harsh drill. I didn't like that.
Another reason to want to leave.
Yes.
Although I think West Germany had conscription.
Yes.
At that point as well.
But a lot better. They had only a year. They could leave the base. The base was close to their home, though. Not like the NVA.
Yeah. How long would you have been conscripted into the NVA if you'd stayed?
18 months.
And how soon was that going to be?
It was... they came to school 2 years before finish. A recruiter would come to school and asking if you want to make an extended time at the military, become a sergeant, 3 years. They would really promise you the world if you do that. And they told me, because my year was not many births in that year, I would get to the NVA with conscript, would be drafted with 26, quite late. Mm. Normally, you be drafted 18, 19 was normal. They said, if you do 3 years, we draft you with 18 and you finish with 21. But otherwise, we draft you with 26, just when you have a family. But I said, no, I resisted. When I later worked a proper company, after the apprenticeship, I moved into a company. I worked in a company which made grinding machines, a lot for export, big thing. It was called Niles, worldwide known, the company. And every time state visits would come around to East Berlin, they would show them around. And especially that, our company, the company I worked for, because it meant getting hard currency export. So they would show them leaders around. And I saw one stage with Gaddafi around, and they showed Kim Il-sung around.
Wow.
And 1989, they showed Gorbachev around. That was just before the 40th.
So you saw Gorbachev?
Anniversary, and he came over and shook my hands.
And you shook hands with,
yes,
Mikhail Gorbachev?
Yes, yes. That was great.
We were going to miss that out.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I've shaken hands with a man who shook hands with Mikhail Gorbachev. That'll suit me, absolutely.
Yeah, it wasn't like in work. We were outside work and he was just coming in and greeting everyone. And I was close to him, close enough to put my hand out. And
right place, right time.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was already, I think, to that time, was already when the relationship between the GDR and the Soviet Union started to crumble because of Gorbachev's perestroika.
Yeah. Did you see any of the East German leaders come around with them or not?
I think there was only the Minister for Economy. He
right.
was always with them, but hardly that Honecker would come.
Yeah.
I saw Honecker and all the Politburo once or twice when I went to the 1st of May demonstration from work. But not because I loved the state, because after that they bribed us. You get free drinks. And we just got hammered after. Yeah. We just went past the tribune and saw them all and then straight to the pub.
And what did you do in your spare time in Berlin?
We would either walk around Berlin, go to the Brandenburg Gate, or go to the Intershop where you could buy things with West German money, sometimes buy jeans, or when I saved always some money up. Or we would go youth club, disco, discotheque, and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you do much sport?
Yeah, we had a sports center in Berlin. I go there ice skating, speed skating. Yeah, it was like in a club. Yeah, so quite enjoyed that.
And was it very cheap to do those sort of things?
It was free to be, because I was like in a club like Dynamo and was speed skating there, training and all that. Yeah.
So it wasn't a Dynamo club?
It was a Dynamo youth club, like the youth, not the professional.
Because I thought Dynamo was the, certainly in football, it was the Stasi team.
Yeah, it was all over, yeah.
So was it connected to the Stasi?
Yeah, I think only the football club, BFC Dynamo, that was Mielke's football club.
Exactly. Did your views on East Germany change when you got older?
Yes, absolutely changed. Because I got more into watching Western TV and watching the news. And actually then I worked, where I did my apprenticeship. It was a company that was right at the Berlin Wall. So it was only between that building where I worked and the war starting was only over the road. So I could see the daily life in West Berlin. And I thought always.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to libsynads.com now. That's libsynads.com.
What madness is just throw off a stone away. I just can't go there. It's so heavily guarded. And I got frustrated and realizing that I only can go when I'm 65 and I'm pensioner. Got more and more frustrated about that there's no chance to go to the West. Mm-hmm. And escaping, I figured it out because I worked there near the border. West Berlin never would have a chance to escape there because it was so heavily guarded. So I didn't want to take any risk or anything. And with West Germany to escape, one of my friends, he tried it and he got caught even before he got there. Caught him on a train, dragged him out, and he got 2 years in prison. My mom's partner, he was a conscript at the border guards, and I asked him, what about her? He said, don't even try. He said, 90% don't even get there. And when you're there, you wouldn't find where to go. So I didn't want to take any risks. So I thought then I have to just wait for an opportunity. When the door opens a little bit, then I have to try.
That must have been bizarre, being able to look across and see the daily life.
It was absolutely.
There, see the cars and the people doing what they do.
Cars, You see the GIs turning up in the Jeep, because that was the American sector, right?
Yeah.
It was just unbelievable.
So near yet so far.
Yes. I later went and after a wall came down, exactly to that point where I looked at, and look from that perspective, that was quite interesting.
I can imagine. You said that your mother's partner was a conscripted border guard.
Yes.
Did he share with you anything about what that job was like and what he did?
Oh, yeah. He told some stories that how they had their shifts, and sometimes they would just come back from the shift and some alarm would come up from the fence, and then they would have to get out all again. And I think there was once a story that I think they caught two children, and one of them actually got shot, and that was like in his time, but he wasn't involved in that. So he told me some stories. Yeah.
And was he from outside of Berlin?
No, he
was a Berliner.
He was a Berliner. But what they used to do, the conscript from Berlin, they wouldn't put him on near the Berlin Wall or so far away. Mm. He was at the border. I don't know if I know the Brocken Mountain.
Yeah, with the listening post on the on the top of it.
So he was there.
Okay.
That's where he was based. And he says some stuff about the Russians. He said there was an area they wouldn't even go. There were restricted area where the Russians were.
Did he give any indication what he'd do if he was confronted with an escaper?
No, he never really liked to talk about that.
I can imagine you wouldn't have had that.
But he said, I could give you tips where to go, but he said, I wouldn't try it because 5 kilometers before the border is actually, if they find you there, you get arrested.
Because I know in Czechoslovakia, they used to have almost like a mock border. So people would think they'd escaped.
Yes.
But they were still in Czechoslovakia.
Yes. So I didn't want to take any risk.
Yeah.
Right? Any like that. No. Yeah.
But did you discuss with your friends in Berlin that if an opportunity arose, you might take it?
Yeah, I had one friend I trusted and said, we would go like see where the River Spree goes into West Berlin. We went over that bridge and you can't escape. There's probably something in the water and guards boats and all that. So we always thought, how could we do? But try it, but then no chance. I told them often that once there's a chance, I will go.
In 1989, things are changing East Germany. Did you participate in any of the demonstrations?
I went once to see a demonstration just from the distance. I didn't want to get involved in anything. And I saw actually the police lining up. And there were like trucks, they had shields, rubber shields in front. I watched her from a distance, and the people were shouting, and police would say over megaphone, would say, leave the area immediately. They were shouting, and they said, thanks for the applause, and then they just went for it. They just pushed them away and beat them, and there was tear gas and all sorts. I watched it from a distance and just went home. Didn't want to get involved in it.
Did you think that East Germany was going to change at that point, or did you think there was going to be a massive repression of some kind?
Up to a point, like a couple of days later, when most of the demonstrations were, when it really was at the worst point, they suddenly changed. They suddenly changed and were saying, we're looking for a dialogue. And you could actually discuss to Volkspolizei, to the police, East German police, you could talk with them. But there was a change. And a couple of days later, Honecker stepped down and Krenz came on. Yeah. But it was still very uncertain what will happen. So that was every day there was something new. So, but you know what, it was crumbling. Yeah.
Did you travel to any of the other Warsaw Pact countries for holidays and things
yes.
like that?
Yes, we went to Czechoslovakia, to Prague. That was the only country I ever visited in East Germany.
And when was that?
That was 1988. We went there from work. So I had a nice few days in Prague. So, yeah. I was amazed. Prague was much more Western-like. And there were a lot more choice in them shops. So it was quite amazing, yeah.
You find an opportunity to escape. Yes. Tell me about that. Tell me how you discover that opportunity and what happens.
That was on a Saturday, the 4th of November, I think. I came home from night shift and I went to bed and got up about lunchtime and switched the TV on, and there came that message. Czechoslovakia is opening the border to West Germany. So I went straight to my mom and said, the Czechs opened the border, let's go. And she said, yeah, okay, no problem. I thought, I had that thinking before, I thought, should I go to the embassy in Prague? Because the embassy was full of East Germans. But that was too much. There were thousands of people. I didn't want to do that. So, but now I've heard that they opened the border. So I said, let's go. That's it. And my mom said, okay, no problem. So we went with her partner as well.
So with the border guard,
yes.
You went?
Yes. Wow. We went there. It was about an afternoon, 4 o'clock. We went down Dresden, and then we came Sinnwald. That is the border crossing from East Germany into the Czechoslovakia. Mm-hmm. And that's where we got like really scared, because I had all my certificates hidden. My mom had some in her underwear and all. And my heart nearly stopped. Yeah, and we looked and checked our documents and I said, okay, have fun.
So what did they, you said you were going on holiday?
No, they didn't ask anything. But I knew an address in Czechoslovakia in case they would ask. So I instructed my mom and her partner the name and where he lives, and just in case they would ask us. Because if we say we just go on holiday, they would say, yeah, show us proof of accommodation or anything. Yeah.
And why are you going there in November?
Yeah. And we got there in Sinnwald at the border crossing. We got somewhere like in the middle of the night. Got there. And the border guard just looked really strict and looked in our face and a big light into our car. And then he just gave us back our IDs and said, okay, good fun, have a good holiday. And that was it.
Were there a lot of people trying to cross the border at that point?
That night we didn't see many cars on the street. Yeah. We just saw them when we came to the border crossing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we drove there all night and through Prague. And then next morning around 8, 9 o'clock, we were at that border crossing. Yeah.
The border crossing between Czechoslovakia and West Germany.
Yes, yes.
And tell me about that crossing.
All right. I said to my mom, you got the chance now. You go, should we go drive through all? No, I don't want. My mom said, I don't want. I want to go back. Okay. I said, okay, then. Give her a goodbye kiss and hug, and she was crying. And off I went. I walked. I went and came to that checkpoint. And there were a few Trabants queuing up. And me walking there. And there was a border guard, and he took my documents and disappeared in a building and came them back about 5 minutes later and said, okay, go. And as you said, the Czechoslovakian border was, there was the fencing right in front into the country, and there was a huge amount of land after it. Mm. I noticed that because I went down that road about a kilometer and came round that bend, and then I saw that big sign, Bundesrepublik Deutschland, and the white line. So I went and just came to that line and made like a big step over it without stopping. But now I'm there where I always wanted. I was like totally excited and happy. It was really great, the feeling, you know. Now I'm there where I always wanted to be. Yeah.
Were you the only person on foot crossing the border, or were there others?
I was the only person on foot, and there were then behind that line at the West German checkpoint were lining up Trabants and all the East German cars. And I found then a Trabant, there were two lads in. And I said, can you just take me wherever you go? I said, yeah, okay, jump in.
Yeah.
So then we went to that West German checkpoint, got some food from the Red Cross and drink, and they said we should go to a West German army base in a place called Bayreuth in Bavaria. That's where we stayed then for a week, that base, yeah.
And that was like the reception center for people coming in. And what happened on that base? Did they ask you questions about who you were and why you crossed? And because I think there was a fear that, you know, that this would be used to infiltrate spies.
Yes, there was a guy from the Bundesgrenzschutz, which was the West German border force. And he asked me why and where I come from, and just a few questions. That was it, really. Mm. And I think he asked me if any my relatives were in the Stasi. He asked me that.
And of course, you're going to say yes to that if you get asked that question.
Yeah.
But yeah, you were certain on that answer.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Rhonda in Virginia, and I support Cold War Conversations because I think the work that Ian is doing is critically important. I think it's vital to record the firsthand accounts of people who lived and experienced the Cold War because it illustrates history in a way that a book never can. So thank you so much for the podcast. It's my favorite podcast, and I look forward to it every week.
To be like Rhonda and help to preserve these incredible stories of the Cold War, as a monthly or annual supporter, you'll be able to listen ad-free, you'll become one of our community, get the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster as a thank you, and you'll bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate to find out more.
I just want to go back to when you cross the Czechoslovak border. When that Czech border guard takes your documents and disappears, what are you thinking at that moment?
Oh, you stand there and you think, oh, what will happen there? No, what will happen? I'm nearly there. Yeah. But he just wanted to check something. So it was okay. Yeah.
And that walk up to the border, did that seem like a long walk?
Oh, yes. And there were no cars. There were no car going through because I think they let them wait all and only let them, always a few at a time through. So I was nearly walking on that road on my own until I came round that bend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was daylight. It was daylight.
Yeah. It was a cold November's day. I remember it well.
Were you tempted to run?
No, I just walked. I had my bag with my clothes, all what I had, and just walked. So after that border crossing, I thought, actually, I'm safe. I'm going to the West. This is it now. Yeah.
And it must have been really tough saying goodbye to your mother, because at that point, you wouldn't know when you might ever see her again.
It was like, I think I was more excited actually to come get out. So that went into the background. So more, I realized that when I was actually in the West, that we might not see each other for a long time. Yeah.
But she wanted you to go. She thought that you were going to have greater opportunities in the West.
Oh, yes, yes.
And her partner stayed with her and they went back to Berlin.
Yes, she told me later there were actually a queue behind them. And when they turned around, people all pointed, the West is there, the West is there. You're going the wrong way. And they went on home, yeah.
Little did they know that in a matter of days, they would be able to get out. So when did you next see your mother again?
I saw her then in May 1990.
Wow, that long after.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you not consider it safe for you to see her before then? Or
It was more like I started working almost straight away in West Germany, like 10 days after I came over to West Germany. So I had to work to accumulate some holidays and all these things. So, yeah. So I had to wait till May.
So you got a job almost straight away then?
Yeah. I worked first on building sites and then I found a job in my profession. So. Mm-hmm. And I stayed the first 10 days in West Germany in that Bundeswehr base. And then I moved to a small village and stayed in a guest house for about a year. I was already working and then later got a flat and lived then 15 years in Bavaria.
Were you fearful going to the West that some of the stories you've been told in the East were true? Like, you know, you were going to become a drug addict or, you know, there were all of these scare stories that the East German TV would show, or your teachers would tell you about. Were you ever fearful that was going to be true?
Not really, because I never listened really to Eastern media. It was propaganda anyway, and I was well prepared because my dad's cousin, who came always from West Berlin, I would ask her thousands of questions and asked her to bring me a newspaper with job adverts. And so I knew that the profession I work optimistic about it. Yeah. So never thought about it. Yeah. The first time I got a bit scared when I saw the first homeless. I never seen a homeless person begging. That was like a bit of a shock for me. Oh God. You could land there. So that was the only thing. But so I was optimistic that I make it. And I really loved it there straight away. Yeah. I fitted in well. And I was like born for the West. I think in East Germany, I wouldn't get that far.
What was it like seeing your mum for the first time in 6 months in May 1990?
Oh, that was just overwhelming, great. And she hugged me and cried. And then we had a lot to talk what happened. And she told me how she experienced the opening of the wall, that they went the same night and all that. We were in contact when I was in West Germany. I rang her up like 3 days after I escaped. I rang her up in work, actually. So we had writing letters and all that, but meeting each other in person, that great, being back at home. And she was really glad that I made it, that I had a job and that all went well. Well, she was happy.
And was your brother still in East Germany at that point?
Yes, he was still in East Germany.
And how did your family fare in the Wende? How did they, did some of them lose jobs, or did they adjust quite quickly to the new way of things?
They still stayed at work, although my mom, she lost her job, but she found another job quite quick, easily. It was only came when it came to the end of the 90s that both became unemployed, but then they were close to retirement, so it was okay for them. Yeah. So they had never big fears or big worries about it. So they enjoyed the Western life, the new life. So, and they said always, don't want to go back there.
No. No. How did your mum's partner get on? I wouldn't have thought there's that much demand for unemployed border guards.
He didn't want to go on a border because they drafted him. So he still had his Western views. So he became self-employed and got on with that as well. Yeah.
Okay. What was his business? Did he start his own business?
He did courier driving.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Bought a car. And,
bit like Deliveroo.
Yes.
Ahead of his time.
Yes, yes.
Okay. What would you say were your fondest memories of your time in East Germany?
Was just like the friends were really real friends. They weren't shallow. Just the relationships between people and all that helping each other is these days, unfortunately, is a bit missed. So and also like from my childhood, so remember so memories like when we went out, my friend and me, we used to play a lot in a forest and stuff like that. Yeah, so yeah, things like that. Really remembered. Nice memories. Yeah.
Did you stay in contact with your school friends?
Yeah, with my friend with whose dad was in the NVA. I'm still in contact these days. So. And we sometimes, we have every 10 years, we have school reunion where I go to Germany to see the old friends. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even the children of Stasi people, they tell me secrets how it was with their mom and dads and where they worked, because they couldn't say that really where they worked. So, so you hear some stories back there. And my Soviet friend, as soon as we left Bernau, never really the contact went, and he must have gone home. So I don't know. Ways.
Difficult to stay in contact when they get posted somewhere else.
Yes, yes.
Those kids whose parents were in the Stasi, how did their parents get on after the wall opened? Did you hear any stories there as to what they did?
I know that some of the parents, like from the Stasi, they got... many of them went into private security companies.
Well,
but I didn't hear much about it, really, about their parents.
Yeah. Everything that they stood for had disappeared almost overnight.
Yeah.
And to have to adjust to that must have been tough. But, you know, you hear of people adapting very quickly to the new reality there.
My friend's dad, who was a colonel by the end of the GDR. He was about to retire, and he was lucky, because otherwise they would either set him down a lot of ranks down or would just dismiss him.
Yeah.
So he was lucky to just retire. Got a good retirement.
You mentioned earlier that your mother had seen her Stasi file. Did she discover anything in that was surprising for her?
she was surprised how much they knew about us. They knew about how our flat looked like, and they knew our friend contacts and all that. Yeah. So she was, we were shocked how much they really knew about us.
Did she discover that there were people that she considered friends who'd been giving the Stasi information?
My brother later, he found out the clear names of the two IMs. One turned to be out one of our neighbors, and one was actually my brother's form teacher as an IM. And she found probably out what it looks like in our house, because there was twice a year parents' evening where the teacher would come to the house. Well, that's how they found out. And they found out how we are in school, and they found out that we quite reluctant about political activity.
Yeah.
So it was all mentioned in that Stasi file.
Yeah, because you hear sometimes of people discovering that a relative had been informing of them on them or something like that, but it was neighbors and teachers who were watching you.
Yeah, sometimes even relatives, even their own husband or wife.
Yeah, yeah. Could happen. What about your father? Did he ever have a look at his Stasi file?
He didn't have any. He tried to find out, but there was nothing.
Wow.
No Stasi file about him. Yeah.
Nothing about him offering cups of coffee or
to the men. They probably didn't write it down on a file because it was their own embarrassment.
Yeah, extra paperwork. Wouldn't want to cover that. Did you ever look to see whether there was anything specific to you as a Stasi file?
No, I think I was too young. Couldn't be any. I always tried not to be too obvious. I always kept my head down. There shouldn't be one.
Don't miss the episode extras, such as videos, photos, and other content. Just look for the link in the podcast information. The podcast wouldn't exist without the generous support of our financial supporters, and I'd like to thank one and all of them for keeping the podcast on the road. If you'd like to help the project, just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate. The Cold War conversation continues in our Facebook discussion group. Just search for Cold War Conversations in Facebook. Thanks very much for listening, and see you next week. Not enjoying the ads? Well, you can avoid them by going to coldwarconversations.com/donate. By becoming a monthly or annual supporter, you'll enjoy ad-free listening, become a part of our community, receive the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster, and bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate for more information.